We good? Alrighty. Now, I know I love sports. I absolutely love it, but I had no idea I loved it this much until the Paris 2024 Summer Olympics. It's just been mesmerizing, to say the least. All these different characters, all these amazing performances. I've not stopped watching since we last chatted. I mean, last Sunday, Noah Lyles brought the world to a standstill when he won the 100-meter final, the men's 100-meter final, one of the most hotly contested and tight races ever. But so much has happened, we've almost kind of forgotten about that. So this week, Sandile and I are going to try very hard to try and encapsulate all the major big Olympic stories for you, because we haven't been able to watch everything, but there's some incredible stories out there that we're going to basically put out for you. And of course, rev you up for the final events that are still coming. We've still got 3 whole days, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday of Olympic action leading into the closing ceremony. But this weekend is also rugby championships. Yep, South Africa's favorite rugby team is back, which means you get to wake up super early and watch them hammer the Aussies. Plus, you get to win again with our friends from Clipdrift, because our That's Gold player selection campaign is still going, and we've got some really cool news around prizes for that. So if we have time, we'll also throw in some MTN8. We've got some Curry Cup, Community Shield, and if anyone cares, also got SA versus West Indies Test Match Cricket.
You don't care about that.
Yes, indeed, doesn't care about that. I think most people do. Anyway, rugby championships, Olympic Games, full steam. Let's get into it. There is an absolute mystery in the show about when I can start talking. It's like there's a screen. I'm being shown different hand signals. We've got to get like something unified here. So, Sandile, I'm horrified that you don't want to talk about the cricket.
I don't care about the Proteas. I had no idea that they've wasted West Indies time once again. Gayton really shouldn't have let them go. Please, let's talk about something else. James, shout out to you. What's up, my brother? If you're here, just making sure you're alive.
We're just here, bro. We're just here. Hand signals and all.
Okay. All right.
On that Proteas tour, it's such a nothing tour, because it is your typical tick boxy. Here's 2 test matches. Here's 3 T20s. That doesn't classify as a tour. That's like a tune-up for something.
I don't. What are they tuning up for? They've just taken an L. It's giving Kosafa Cup of cricket once
it is.
Again.
It's the Kosafa Cup of sport now.
Yes. All right. So look, please, Ben.
My intro, I didn't just give it for like my own health. There is so much to get through the Olympics here. So, 100%. You know, like last week, we gave you a lot of heads up around how you can best follow the Olympic Games. Yeah. And of course, the app has been great. Every morning, I've been putting out all the things that I want to watch. And people give me a lot of value out of that, because obviously it sucks if you've got a day job.
Yep.
But I think people have been doing some sick days, whatever it's taken to get you into it. There's so much to go into. So I've picked a variety of stories that I think have made the Olympics so special for me. We're going to run through them now.
Cool.
If you are watching live on the YouTube, of course, you chime in at any time here. James is monitoring the comments.
Yep.
So you can be part of this. But for me, we've got to start with right at the top there.
Yeah.
Noah Lyles.
Yeah.
In my mind, he didn't look the best going through the heats. I was going to back the Jamaican, but there he was, when it mattered the most, 9.79 in the final. Were you surprised that he left it late?
I think, first of all, I love Noah Lyles. Talk your shit and win it at the end. You know, we've been complaining the past couple of weeks, a lot of these athletes who complain when they start losing. This guy called it. He said, I'm the best. And he showed up on the track and won. And I am super happy for him. Once again, arrogant American, but we take it because he's a serial winner. He left some in the tank through the heats. And then he's probably one of the best 100 meters I've seen in recent times. You know, we probably have to give a lot of respect to Usain Bolt's race, because after that race, I don't think Bolt's record ever gets, you know, beaten again. And Noah Lyles was amazing. In that 100, well, and throughout.
I'm glad you brought that up, because when you look at the competition in that field, the quality of runners, how they all brought their best, and 9.79 was the time.
Shucks.
I keep thinking about this. It's like, is Bolt's record ever going to be beaten if that field in that moment cannot come close?
I don't think it will ever be broken. I mean, we saw how quick that 100 was. And even when they show highlights of that race, you see the gap between, you know, Bolt and everybody else. And look how tight this was. And you see someone like Akani run the fastest South African time, like 9.82. And that was an amazing and a spectacular finish.
Yeah, so this is another reason why I want the enhanced game. Sorry, I just totally forgot there. But Usain Bolt's record is 9.58. And these Oaks did everything for 9.79.
Woo.
Now, you might look at that and go, okay, 0.2 of a second, but that is a lot. A lot of a lot.
It is a lot of a lot. And the fun fact is that, and I found this on Twitter, shout out to Twitter or X now, Carl Lewis ran 9.992.
Yes.
And came second in the 1988 Olympics. That person who ran the same time in this Olympic came dead last. So that's how you're seeing the golfing class of, you know, running coming and how great that race was. And this is the same guy who came second to Noah Lyles or beat Noah Lyles in the heat and wasn't even close in the rest of the field. So you can see how much Noah Lyles had in the tank. And it was a spectacular race for me.
It really was. And then suddenly everyone forgot about that because Armand Duplantis, what a guy. I was watching like the preliminaries of the pole vault. And I was watching like guys go up, they come down, they knock things down. Then the oak with a gigantic schlong knocked it down. And everyone was just talking about that.
Yeah.
All we had was just schlong pics of that French guy. But while this was all happening, because I love sports so much, I looked past the schlong and I thought, this Swedish oak, how good is he? He's like a different thing. He's having naps in between goes. He's missing distances because he's like, nah, I get that.
I'll catch you.
Yeah. Everyone's going in these small increments. And this oak, okay, I mean, I'm not going to sit here and say I knew who Armand Duplantis was prior to this. I
had no idea.
No one, most people have no idea who these people are. That's what's so great about the Olympics is that they uncover people for us. But this oak has basically since 2020 been adding a centimeter every time. So he's been doing this for a while. It wasn't like, cool, he just broke through.
Yeah, and what was dope about that pole vault is it seemed like the three of them, the three runner-ups, well, the winner and the two runner-ups had such a great camaraderie. Even, you know, they were pushing Duplantis, if I got it right, to get over this world record because it clearly had been there for a while. And I really loved pole vault, and I actually swore on your ex that I needed to tune in because it started getting tight, and then he shanked the second one. And then when he cleared it, it was like the whole stadium went wild. And like we're talking about, you know, track and field at the Olympics is probably the best thing ever because of these type of moments where just before the 100, you got to go to this and then switch back onto it. So this was amazing.
So 6.25. Okay. 6.25. So now if you were growing up in the 80s or the 90s, whatever, Sergei Bubka was the dude.
Yeah.
I remember he was like one of those guys that he was so good. He would win his thingy and then he would just go for world records.
Yeah.
So what Nike did back in the day, they were like, okay, this guy's far too good. You need to incentivize him. So when he gets a world record, we'll give him $100,000.
Damn.
Because they thought, like, how many times can he possibly do it?
Yeah.
Meanwhile, this oak had so much more in the tank and he knew it. So he would win his thing, just like Duplantis did.
Yeah.
He would win it. So, okay, I got the goal guaranteed. No one's coming close. Yeah. Now I'll do the world record.
Yeah.
Sorry. So it's like he's got two sports. The one where he just wins, the next one he makes money because I don't know what the deal is. I mean, you're sponsored by Puma. I assume there's a sponsorship bonus in there.
I hope so.
So what Duplantis has done is that he goes up 1 centimeter every time and breaks a world record. Sergei Bubka set 18 world records in his prime.
Where are the other jumpers?
So no, but think, this is the most amazing business model of how you corner your sport.
Yeah.
So this Sergei must have worked out, okay, I can do this until, I don't know, 6.16 was Bubka.
Yeah.
So he kept himself back. It's like Intel Protium, those processors. Like you get Intel 4 and 5.
Yes.
Intel already made like Intel 30 back in the 90s.
Yes.
But they let one out every year. And
it's
I
like
feel
an
like
iPhone.
It's exactly what it was.
Yeah.
So Duplantis is just like Sergei Bubka, is actually a really smart businessman almost. That's how good he is within the sport.
And he seems like a good oak.
Oh, it's a great oak. You see him on the press conference afterwards.
Like a great oak, and he did the celebration.
He did
as
like
well.
The whole Turkish man celebration.
He did the Turkish man celebration.
So there's some other stats around this guy where we can go quite deep, but I want to get into a lot more other stories despite him. Additionally to him. But when he's running with that pole, because his pole is thicker than the other oak's poles. I know in pole vault, you can't say after the big schlong incident with the French guy, but he has a thicker pole because it has more spring to it.
Right.
But not every oak can handle a thicker pole.
Mm.
And that's what makes him so good. So all the other guys have a thinner pole. It doesn't give them as much, but I really got into this. And where I was going with that is that when he's running with his giant pole, he's going at 38.7 kilometers an hour. You know how fast 38.7 kilometers an hour is? It's just below the sprinters, the main sprinters. Dude, like, what this guy does is phenomenal. It's absolutely phenomenal. Oh.
Yeah, look, that sport, like, you know, a technical sport.
I've never spoken this much about pole vault ever. So clearly I'm not unpacking this well.
Yeah, you know, this sport, you know, it's such a technical sport. You know, a lot of people think, you know, I could pick up running. I could pick up, you know, anything else. Pole vault is so specialized. And you know what we're talking about in previous episodes? It feels like this pole vault is the sport, you know, and it's the pinnacle of, you know, pole vaulting. I don't know who else cares about pole vaulting at the Olympics. It's such a great showcase. I just want to move on from talking about poles now.
Okay. All right. Well, I mean, Duplantis, he had such a big night when he won his gold. Yeah. The next day he came onto this like Swedish interview because obviously he's Swedish, but I mean, he's at like a college in America, so he sounds American.
Yeah.
And he's just searching for these words in Swedish. And eventually he just says, am I making sense?
He's the one that went to university with Shikari as well.
Yeah, I think so.
That's amazing. That's a great thing for their program as well.
All right. So look, there's just so many again. Mijan Lopez Nunez, the Cuban wrestler.
Yeah.
So this folks 41 years old, not to be fucked with. He's like one of those guys that you look at him and go, okay, that can hurt people.
Tank.
The Giant of Herradura is his nickname, which is also really great.
Yeah.
He's the first Olympian to ever win 5 golds in 5 events. So, yes, Michael Phelps has been amazing. We all know he's the greatest Olympian of all time. But this guy has always gone for the big Greco-Roman guys.
Yep.
He's buckled all of them. He started out Greco-Roman 120 kilograms. Now he finished off with Greco-Roman 130 kilograms. So he is a mountain.
Yeah.
You don't just get a name like the Giant of Herradura out of nowhere.
Yeah.
And so 41 years old, he's now taking his shoes off, which is ceremonial for I give up. I'm done now.
Retiring.
5 golds.
I think that's amazing. I think he goes down as probably one of the greatest Olympians, just in the story. I mean, to dominate for such a long period of time and to retire at your peak, you know, he could go at the way he wrestles, he could go and come back, you know. But great story once again, those Olympic stories that we always talk about, you know, great winners, you know, certifying yourself as the most dominant in your sport. I hope he doesn't go to WWE and do like a Kurt Angle.
I don't know what this guy could do because in Cuba, if you're a 5-time gold medalist, your net worth is probably still nothing.
7 rand.
I mean, the thing is, like, because he is a big guy, in Cuba, what happens is if you don't win, you don't eat. This is how these camps used to be. I know definitely in the 80s and 90s, maybe they got slightly better.
Please.
But these oaks, you have to win if you want to eat.
Yeah.
And the fact that he ended up as a 130-kilogram Greco-Roman wrestler suggests that he won a lot.
Yeah.
I would love to know more about that guy's story because a lot of people who are that decorated as Olympians become quite wealthy. Yeah. Obviously, you don't make money by getting the Olympic medals, but it leads to other things.
Vince McMahon, sign him up. He deserves something.
So, also another prolific Olympian, Simone Biles has now got 7 gold, 2 silver, and 2 bronze. Yeah. So, the interesting thing about this, I think she's the first all-round winner who hasn't been a teenager.
Yeah, that's weird for the sport.
It is, but I mean, she's 27, which means that she's over the hill. 27, like old in Olympic. I mean, almost a dog years. You know, like, because gymnasts are obviously so much, they peak so much earlier.
Yep.
And they've got tiny little primes. But Simone Biles is like 4'8", okay? She's just this pocket little dynamo. And this is the most I've ever watched her compete. So she has such presence about her.
Oh, yes.
But now this is the big question. She'll be 31 at the next Olympics. Now, does she just specialize in one of the events and try to keep it going? Because obviously it's the home Olympics, it's Los Angeles. But then the other thing is, her husband desperately wants to start a family.
Her husband got to chill the fuck out, man.
Well, he says he'll support her, but
he got to chill out. I mean, I just think of how competitive gymnastics is. I don't think it's the roof in your late 20s. I just think it's been naturally so competitive. I was even looking at the Team USA, you know, the age range in Team USA. It's like after 25, you generally don't make it anymore. But she's been so dominant. I'd love to see her go one more time again, you know. And you know, she really doesn't have any competition in that space. You know, she did really well. I really hope she goes again one more time. Like we said, we love these great Olympian stories. And let's see what she can do. And she's one of the most dominant female athletes as well, and popular, and it gives it, you know, a lot of gravitas in that. And you know, we watch female gymnastics now because of people like her. So we really do want somebody like her in the sport. I hope she comes back, man. I really do.
So Another reason for her to come back is that she's not the most decorated Olympian of all time in gymnastics. Larita Latynina, so Soviet Union absolute like legend, 9 golds, 5 silver, and 3 bronze. And I won't say that all the medals have been hollow for the gymnastics, but not having the Russians there is a huge thing.
Huge.
Because initially what used to happen is those Eastern European bloc countries, it was a massive pride thing with gymnastics. And there was a lot of skullduggery that went on there. And we all know with the doping and stuff. Mm. But if you want to be the best of the Olympics, you've got to beat the best from Eastern Europe. That's always been how it's been.
So I would
offer, saying I'm a gymnastics apex supporter.
I was going to be like, you really back? Do you feel the same way? And I hope I don't throw you off. Do you feel the same way about the female sprinting without the Jamaicans, the strong Jamaicans?
Absolutely. Ooh. Absolutely. But again, that's more of like a changing of the guard rather than not being there. Like there are so many talented young gymnasts who don't get the chance to compete because of the whole Russia decided to go full in on drugs.
Yep. No, I'm with you on that one. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a bit sad. But then again, it's also that comes back to like every Olympic story has a weird dynamic or a unique dynamic.
Yep.
So Simone Biles, she's incredible and she's only 27, but think of her as old.
That's crazy.
But then at the same time, it's like you want to start a family, which is another dynamic.
Yeah.
Maybe she'll do it. Maybe she's so great she can do it.
She can do both. We've seen a lot of the female athletes do it, go and come back. You know, Felix came back, and dominate the sport as well. So I hope she comes back. It's good for the sport.
There's also so much pressure on the Olympians to breed because these are the best humans, right? Think about it.
Is there?
Well, they are. Look, they're the best human specimens. I mean, people would rather see Olympians breed than us breed.
Yeah.
Because then you're getting the best back in the pool, right?
Yeah.
Now she's like, her husband plays for the Chicago Bears. Athlete. The world needs him to breed, actually, for better athletes.
All we could do is some more accountants in this world, I'm just like saying.
Speaking of keep it in the family, have you heard of Mykolas Alenkna?
Tell the story.
Mykolas Alenkna. This is a great story. Didn't win gold last night, okay? But he's a discus thrower. He's 21 years old. Now, his dad was an Olympic champion, two-time Olympic champion, 2004. And his dad held the Olympic record for discus throw. So last night, this Oak, Nicholas, he's already broken the world record. His dad spent his entire career trying to break the world record that was around since 1986. This youngster in April smashed the world record. So just think, like, you've had this kid because you're an athlete who's now following your footsteps, has now broken the world record that you were trying to break. Last night, steps up with discus, hoists it out there, breaks his dad's Olympic record.
That's amazing. Oh, Olympics. This is why we keep on telling you.
But then the weird thing after that is that Rocha Stoner from Jamaica, very next throw, then breaks the Olympic record.
And says, cheers, buddy.
And takes gold.
Yeah, it's like, but the story is these type of stories. It's really not about the gold medal. It's really about the stories around, you know, these Olympians. That was such a great story because, you know, connecting with family, you know, connecting through sports. So this was one of those, once again, these great Olympian stories that, you know, we love to hear about. And it was awesome.
But it's quite weird that Jamaica now has 2 medals for throwing things and 1 medal for sprinting.
Which is strange. I wanted to say, I'm like, they've bowed out so horrendously in the relay and now they're great at discus. Once again, Jamaican program, they're onto something. They said, we can't just be sprinters.
All right. So Kristen Faulkner, this is one of the most amazing Olympic stories. She was in the American college system. She was a rower. And then she decided, okay, I need to go get a job. So she's working in finance. Okay. 2017, she took a beginner's cycling class, as in she wanted to learn how to become a bike person. Just go a little cycle around Central Park in New York. In 2020, she started taking it very seriously, okay? So much so that in 2021, she quit her finance job and decided, I want to be a cyclist. She then had a horrific accident. A car hit her this year, and she wasn't even qualified for the Olympic Games because she cracked a shin, and she wasn't sure. And then someone pulled out of Team America. So again, she hasn't been cycling for very long. Very new to all these kind of things, competition, all that kind of stuff. She then wins the road race. She beats the best cyclist in the world out of that. Wasn't it even meant to be at the games itself, and she wins the gold medal in the road race?
That's crazy.
Like, it's absolutely incredible. And then it gets better because then they roped her into the track team. Because, you know, track cycling is one of the best events.
Yeah.
They have these huge cambers and these guys go around, there's bikes with no brakes. Yeah. They hauled her into the team for USA.
And she got
another gold.
That's crazy.
So in less than 7 years, she's gone from what is a bike to double gold medal cyclist winner.
And made it. once again, back your dreams.
Back your dreams.
Back your dreams.
Also, it does help if you genetically are a natural athlete like she is.
I was going to say.
Okay, so another great story around cycling was Saya Sakakibara.
Okay.
Saya Sakakibara, I've nailed that. I know I have. On Friday, I was waiting all week for the BMX racing. Yes. All week.
This was yours that you've been wanting to talk about this.
And that time came, okay? So the women's were going all out in the heats. Yeah. So how it works is that you get people to go into heats and they have three runs because it's so quick and so much can happen.
Yeah.
They give you a chance to at least get the points up. So Saya Sakakibara. Saya Sakakibara. It's a tough one to say. I keep thinking capybara. Yeah. Saya Sakakibara, she was just amazing. Like I knew nothing about the sport, obviously. Yeah. And then I watched the men's. And then the men's, all three of the best French Oaks managed the final.
Cool.
And then all three of the best French Oaks, 1, 2, 3. Gold, silver, bronze. The crowd was going absolutely nuts. And then one of the French Oaks was like waiting around afterwards. Women's came.
Yep.
Saya Sakakibara. Nails it. She gets ahead of everybody, wins gold by a mile, and this Oak's giving her a big hug. That's her boyfriend.
Damn.
So her boyfriend won bronze, and the very next race, she then won gold, and then they shared this moment.
That's absolutely...
But what made this moment even more amazing is that in the last Olympics, she had a really massive fall. So much so that she was concussed. She was like really shaken up by that.
Yeah, because those accidents are quite hectic.
They are quite hectic. But then her brother also had a major accident, actually had a brain injury, as in had to like relearn how to do normal stuff day to day. So all of this has kind of been running through her life in the last couple of years.
Yeah.
And she absolutely obliterated the field, won gold. It's such one of those really cool moments. It's like, it's a sport that you would never care about. But it was packed. There was 15,000 people in this arena.
Yeah.
And it all just came down to this race and her being this amazing champion.
Can I jump into one?
Yep.
I forgot to put it here. My bad. I want to talk about the Nigerian female Olympic team. They are the first African basketball team to make it through to the next round. Great, great story for African basketball. Unfortunately, lost to Team USA yesterday. But that program, and they've got so many female athletes that are now playing, you know, in college ball and in pro and in EuroLeague. So I just wanted to give a huge credit to the Nigerian basketball, female basketball team and the South Sudan one as well. We talked about it a little bit last week. That's just a great, you know, great story about African sports and the growth of that sport and the growth of, you know, basketball holistically in the continent, you know, that such talents are now, you know, pushing the boundaries of the growth of the sport and the challenge. So yeah, I just wanted to throw that in there.
Yeah, absolutely. Because it just takes those little wins to get like that next step, you know, and then you don't do that for another 2-3 Olympics and suddenly you're in semis and finals. But, you know, two absolute unknown countries again. So Dominica.
And she made sure you get it right.
Tia LaFont.
Not Dominican Republic. I loved that.
It was so fun. So Tia LaFont, she wins the women's triple jump out of nowhere, right?
Yeah.
Absolutely nails it. And then in her press conference, it could only be at the Olympics,
yeah,
where she's like, okay, well, I'll tell you about my country. Yeah. And that was the press conference.
Yep.
We're not the Dominican Republic. This is Dominica.
Yeah.
Dominica is a tiny little island in the West Indies.
Yeah.
70,000 people.
Damn.
70,000. And she put them on the map, like literally. Oh. That's quite a cool thing to do. Just like Julian Alfred, okay? So she won the 100 meters and wasn't the favorite. You know, it's always about the Americans, the Jamaicans, and then St. Lucia, again.
Dominant.
Tiny little place. There is 180,000 people at St. Lucia.
That's crazy.
This is way bigger than Dominica.
I think it's the size of Soweto. That's crazy.
Not even. Not even like a small section of it. It's like a half of Orlando.
So like that story is so dope. And then I saw on Instagram, they've already started decorating the airport. So by the time she gets back, she's a full-on superstar. And once again, these are the stories that we love talking about. And you know, the Dominica one, I made the mistake that the journalist also would have made as well. The Dominican Republic, and she went on, told the story.
But I look
and
at
she's such a strong ambassador for that country now. Now that, you know, all the eyes are going to be on this country now.
But I look at that map and I think to myself, there's no way going back into cricket, but why can't they just be friends and be the West Indies like Great Britain?
I don't think they vibe like that.
I mean, it's a cool story and all, but can't you just get together and then just become one country for the greater good of all your athletes?
Oh, man, yeah. So, yo, man, shout out to the federation for at least supporting them to get to the Olympics, because imagine we didn't get to see such a talent.
Okay, so obviously the French. Now, the French have got lots of people because it's a home Olympics for them.
Yeah.
So they've had, like in most of the heats and most of the races, you're going to have a Frenchie here and there. And some of them have been winning, but some of them have really stood out. So Melina Robert-Michon, women's discus, it is her seventh Olympics. Her seventh Olympics. This 45-year-old Tunny, I don't know what French for Tunny is, yeah, but she's rolled in there. And seventh. Obviously, she didn't win, but seven Olympics. That's hella amazing, eh?
She must be killing it during, you know, trials for the Olympics. Good if she's genes. That dominant, damn.
Good genes. Or she just keeps that pimp hand strong with all the grandkids or something, because strong woman. And then, obviously, Leon Machard was the French swimmer with, like, the most, okay? Yeah. So he's like... He was meant to be the cover boy for the French team.
Yeah.
But we've seen in the past that there's so much pressure around lighties that come into it. Like, this is the big hope for the nation.
Yeah.
And the Soak nailed every opportunity in the pool. Another fun fact about the pool. This is one of those weird things. Because, you know, everything's made. Like, they just took the rugby stadium and then put that pool together.
Yeah.
The swimmers were unhappy because the pool was quite shallow. The shallower the pool, the slower the swim.
That's hectic. I did not know. Is that why the times have been quite slow?
Because the pool has been shallower than most.
So there's no like stock standard like...
You would think that it would be a stock standard thing. But I think when you're building this kind of stuff to cut down costs, use less water. I don't know. The green people get excited about that. But yeah, it's been slower because there's been less water in the pool.
James.
So Olympic pools are regulation size. It's supposed to be 3 meters deep. This one was... 2.8 or something like that. And that was the reason it was too shallow. Less or more surface tension? I'm not a scientist.
But you would think, I take it all back now. 3 meters, then you can make that standard. For the sake of like 10 centimeters, Paris, you've just, that's cheap.
I mean, come Paris.
You can just take the tiers of like, okay, so Leon Machard, well done. Swimming is all done now. Katie Ledecky, by the way, obviously a huge Olympic Games for her as well. Yep. But have you heard the story of Kalia Namur?
Break that down for me.
Kalia Namur. This is, we're going to finish up with the Olympic stories with this woman. Yeah. So one of France's most amazing gymnasts, but like proper will take on Simone Biles, will take on the best of the best.
Yeah.
So France, in all their infinite wisdom, said, right, we're going to get all our gymnasts together. And 2 years out, we're going to make them live in Paris. They're going to all train in the same place in Paris and all going to have the same coaches.
Yeah.
And Kelly over here, she's like, no, I'm in a small town. I've got a gym I like and coaches that I like. And they were like, okay, well, we're going to defund your gym and we're going to strip your coaches of their jobs.
Damn.
How's that, hey? That's wild. So she was like, double fuck no.
Yeah.
Her dad's Algerian. So I was like, Dad, I need to get a passport because I'm not going to actually compete for France. I want these coaches, so I'm going to compete for Algeria.
Love that.
And that's what she did. Got the passport.
That's what she told him.
2023, she competed as an Algerian for the first time. And now, first woman ever for a gymnastics medal in the Olympic Games. She won for the uneven bars. She won gold.
Oh, man.
Isn't that a cool story?
That's so cool. And France, stop trying to colonize and dominate people, man. Jeez.
That was just so rough because France's Olympics, I mean, their team didn't make it to the finals, the women's team.
Yeah.
And they got squat with their individual things. And there she was, Algerian flag, gold medal.
That's an amazing story, man.
So tonight we've got the men's 200 meters, Thursday, if you are watching us live, which is going to be amazing. We've got Lyles Tebogo. Is it Tebogo or is it Tebogo?
No, it's Tebogo.
That's what it means from Botswana. But obviously, all the commentators go Tebogo.
Yeah.
Tebogo.
Can we talk about... how quick this brute is?
He's amazing.
I didn't know that he was this quick. Once again, Olympics.
Now, I've been amazed by how much African talent's coming through.
Jeez.
And it's just sad because it's been put up against like waning talent like Wade van Niekerk. I did not mean for that to be wordplay. But he, against those Oaks, you realize what actual incredible top-end speed looks like now.
I don't want to bash Wade, but he just shouldn't have gone to this Olympics.
He was 400. He pulled out of the 400, and then he got into the 200. And there's other sort of... There's other controversy around that because him doing that then eliminated someone else, apparently.
Yeah. And he got smoked. Like, smoked. It was bad. Sorry, guys. Like, it was really bad. And I just call it quits. It's cool.
But we do have these great young talents coming through, okay? So, unfortunately, none of the South Africans made it into the 200-meter final. But there's Tebogo from Botswana.
Yep.
The look looked good in the 100 as well. Mm. He looked pretty amazing in everything he's done so far. So we got Noah Lyles. We got Kenny Bednarik.
Mm-hmm.
He's great to watch.
Yep.
There's Knighton as well. Also amazing. And then these two Zimbabwean Oaks.
pushing
Makarawara and Taramba.
I was just like, where did you guys come from? And push through.
And look good.
Great.
Like, good. And then 400 meters hurdles for the women's tonight. Femke Bol versus Sydney McLaughlin Laverne.
Say that quickly one more time.
Sydney McLaughlin Laverne.
Yeah.
I'm still stuck on Saki Kakibara.
Yeah. Shout out to you.
Yeah. So that's going to, like, those are the two of the biggest, because the 200 meters is phenomenal. It's right up there with the 100 as far as drama is concerned. Yeah. The 400 meter hurdles is psychotic. What it does for your body.
Jeez, it is.
It's such a niche kind of sport. And those two women we just mentioned now are the best of the business.
Yeah, it's such a brutal race. I've been watching the hurdles and those guys hit those things and they look like they're going to collapse. So like 400 must be crazy.
Yeah. So like weightlifting's back on the scene as well. It started yesterday. So Friday, I don't want to get into all of this because it is just so much, but you've got men's triple jump is going to be a huge finale there. We've got the men's 4x100 meter relay final tomorrow, Friday, 7:47. Akani Simbini basically single-handedly took the team into that.
What a race.
The men's 400 meter hurdles final will be Friday night. The women's beach volleyball final is tomorrow night.
Yeah.
I feel like that's been going on since the beginning.
Yeah.
I feel like they were playing during the opening ceremony. But it's great.
For me, we've been watching the basketball and I've been right about it the whole time. Right now, as we're speaking, or probably at 5:30, France versus Germany. I've got Germany taking it. But USA versus Serbia, we're going to get a blockbuster final if France and USA meet each other. So, guys, if you're around your TV, today is a great day for basketball. So, make sure you tune in.
All right. So, those are your settings there. So, yeah, I mean, look. The medal table right now is very interesting as well for the Olympics because ultimately the USA always have the most people.
Yeah.
And when they send people, they're also hugely accomplished. So it's not like a couple of speckies here and there. These oaks are properly in contention. But look at that, 32 bronzes to China's 17 and 35 silvers to China's 23. So a lot of Americans have been there but just pipped out on the gold.
Yeah.
So gold 27 and China's got 25 golds. It is so incredibly tight, of course, because you only get really monitored on your gold medals. So if China, with all their weightlifters, and I'm sure they'll sneak a few golds in with the diving, of course,
yeah.
It's going all the way to the wire. But you've got to say, pound for pound, Australia. With 18 gold medals,
damn.
They are the best sporting nation in the world.
Australia, with such a low population.
And basically, Australians are a certain kind of person, unless they've got a lot more immigrants. Yeah. But basically, just tall, lanky, like white oaks who love a beer.
Yeah, I'm sure.
And they can do all these events.
Are you sure this is right?
It's completely, completely correct.
I think we got to audit this one. We need KPMG.
But the thing is, I've been to Australia in a sporting capacity, and I learned a lot about their Olympic funding. I learned a lot about their structures.
Yeah.
These oaks are smart, and they care, and they really do invest in sports on levels that we'll never be able to comprehend here.
Is it across the line, like swimming?
Yes.
Athletics?
No, they genuinely back care about
all their sports.
If you do a sport, great, you're in. They love you. Obviously, swimming is like a major thing for them because of historical traditions and success. And you have your Olympic marquee events.
Yeah.
But if you rock up there and you're like, I'm a skateboarder, they're like, cool, be behind you all the way. It's
beautiful, man.
It's well funded and it's an incredibly impressive system that they have. So France obviously doing pretty well as a home team, but United States, Republic of China. Synchronized swimming last night.
That's good. No. I'm still shocked at Australia. Jeez. And I saw Dirk Kutsia's comment there. Shout out to them, man.
Yeah. So that. Okay, Thomas, you need to just tell us which one we need to read here because I can't keep doing that. Okay. All right. We need to get into rugby, guys.
We need to get into rugby. Me too. Let's do it.
Now, rugby is incredibly special for so many reasons on this show.
Yes.
So first up, we need to tell you about our Clipdrift That's Gold player selection game. So as we've been doing since the Irish test, our friends over at Clipdrift, who basically just said to us this year, guys, we want to have a draw with rugby. And we, of course, said yes. So if you go on to clipdriftthatsgold.ca.za on your phone here, go on there. If you're new to it, you've got six amazing rounds ahead of you to win prizes and to get a good score.
Yep.
Or if you are just logging back in, just get back onto the games. You click there. You press your button. I'm spinning as we go real time here because, I'm still in this. And yes. I made it very clear right from the start that I'm still going to win this. And I just got, as you can see there, Cheslin Colby.
Oh, come on.
Okay, so my guy for the weekend is Cheslin Colby. I've shown you right there. So Cheslin's going to be a big point scorer for me.
Yep.
He's going to run rings around these oaks. He's going to score me points. They're going to put me high up on the log.
Yep.
Now, the On the Bounce pool itself has a grand prize, which we'll get to next week.
Yep.
We're just finalizing a few details. It's going to be an amazing experience for you and a friend. Then there is the major pool, the overall pool, if you win that. And then we're going to have weekly prizes going out now for the Rugby Championship. So get on there, pick a player. And when you picked a player, share that player online and tag us on your favorite social media. Show us who your player is. And for this week, we'll be giving away a case of Clipdrift Premium. That's a pretty cool prize.
That's amazing.
So start your rugby experience right now with us in Clipdrift. Go on to clipdrift.gold.co.za. Pick your player, share your player online, tag us on social media. And if we like your player or just your enthusiasm around your player, you could be winning a case of brandy. James is going to obviously pick that. But a case of Clipdrift Premium could be yours just by picking a player.
Yeah, well, that's great. And it's great. It's user-friendly, man. Guys, jump in.
The nitty-gritty of this, though, is that it's the Rugby Championships. Now, the Boks are currently universally known as a great World Cup team and then a decent test team after that.
Yeah.
Our record's like 63% or something for test matches, okay? So it's not incredible. But yes, we've got the four World Cup titles. This team has done so much, we need to do that next thing of becoming a better World Cup to World Cup team.
Yeah.
This Rugby Championship has given us the most amazing opportunity to do that.
Yeah.
So if we go into Superbets and look at, obviously, the odds and who's doing what, the Springboks are favorites currently at 0.65. New Zealand's second favorites at 1.45. And then we get the other guys who are never going to win this thing.
Argentina.
Argentina at 21. Australia at 27. I mean, that is a massive gap.
That's huge.
Again, I mean, you go on superbets.co.za, you can verify this, but it's a two-horse race. It really is. Now, how the Rugby Championship works is that you get home-away games all over the place, and every year, there's a different skew to that.
Yep.
So when I said that everything is in the favor of the Springboks this year, I was not telling a lie. Basically, we are playing Australia away now, so that's two games, which is cool. Our biggest opponents we play at home, New Zealand, back-to-back at home. Then we go home and away against Argentina to wrap it up.
So no matter what, at the end, we can just all grab those points.
Fixture list looking solid. Our team itself, great depth. I know we've got injuries here and there, but it's really, really solid.
I'm surprised so many of these guys are back.
Well, Malcolm Marks was obviously a question mark.
Yeah.
Peter Sifto-Toye was another question mark. Yeah. They're in the team straight away.
That's crazy.
So we've got plenty of guys. Jasper Visser eventually comes back after clearly committing murder, seeing as he was suspended for so long.
I was so shocked that they were like, guys, chill out.
It was May.
And, Vili Rubek, we've got to talk about that for me. You know, we've been saying Vili got to come back. You know, he was the difference in that island, in that second island game.
So, yeah, I mean, look, let's jump to it, okay? So the team for this weekend against the Wallabies. Now, there's so many other precursors to this, right? Basically, we haven't won much in Australia at all.
I still don't believe the fact that we've only like won twice in like 20 games.
Well, since 2010, we've played 13, lost 10, won 2.
Oof.
Since the 1990s, we've only won once in Brisbane.
Jesus.
So that's another horrific fact.
Yeah, we got to get a dub. Yeah.
I don't want to be that guy because this can come back to haunt you. But I'm going to go quite strong with this and say, you know what? It means absolutely nothing. Australia right now are ranked 9th in the world. That's a world ranking which tells you where you are. 9th.
But you got to beat them, Ben. You know that. We've seen this so many times in sport. We've seen them.
Sandile, they're 9th. Italy. But, Italy are a better team than these Oaks. Argentina,
but you gotta
Scotland.
But you know what you got to do. The Sharks have had such a great team, and they've been getting spanked around the whole time. So, you know, for me, it's respecting them. The record speaks for itself. We
gotcha.
Got to go there. We got to go there, and we've got to go there and win. We got to go there and be, my favorite word, we got to go be clinical.
Yes. Got you. But I look at this and I think, okay, cool. It's great in the preamble of all sporting things, talk about stats and history and all that kind of stuff. Yes, you will always respect every single team you play against. You will not take them for granted. You respect the fact that there's been a bit of a hoodoo about playing away. But let's push that all to the side and let's be real about this. This Bok team is going to go there and they have to smash these Oaks. We can't see anything less than smashing these Oaks.
Yeah.
And I haven't watched enough Super Rugby Pacifica to really care, but I looked at that team sheet and I was like, okay, I don't recognize any of these names.
Who are these people?
But I don't care if they've all had great Super Rugby. Yeah. We're going to smash them. Yeah. Those Oaks are not known on the international stage. We have to be the significantly better team.
Yeah. And for me, what's going to be super exciting about, you know, this game is that Sacha Feinbingo basically starts at 10. We get to see the machine really rolling. So I'm super excited about that. Also excited about the guys coming back. You know, Peter Steph, Malcolm Marks, Willie LaRue. You know, like we kept on discussing like two episodes ago. He was the game changer in the island series. So I'm happy that he's back in. And stability and veteran presence. Awesome.
So another point to that is like, with a team this good, I equate most things in life to cars. A team this good is like the Springboks. It's like having a garage full of like amazing cars you don't often use, just so you can bring Kobus Reinach out of nowhere.
Shout out.
It's like you've got that little sneaky Porsche 911 just getting in a little bit of dust and you can just whip it out whenever you want. Because Pfaff's obviously injured. Yeah. We got Grant Williams on the bench, but then Kobus Reinach, he's like a primary player. You can just bring him in.
Yeah, but also like, I love Kobus Reinach. I don't understand why he doesn't get enough love. I know Pfaff is the guy, but he is great and he's got wheels.
He does.
And indeed. So that's what's also going to be exciting. You know, we talked about Tony Brown and his you know, aggression in terms of enterprising rugby. So I think Kobus Reinach just adds on to that and spraying that ball around, playing quick, enterprising rugby. It's going to be exciting to watch.
So speaking about the stalwarts, Vili's 96th cap here.
Oh, just now, there get was my a, guy to 100.
There was a major concern because Vili took a couple of knocks to the head.
Yeah.
I don't want him to be in an adult nappy in a couple of years' time. So I hope he's bounced back from it because he got a concussion in the the URC semifinals, got a concussion. Yeah. And then the game against Ireland got a concussion. So I hope he's good. And it's kind of fitting, even though he's not a colour look, to put a scrum cap on in the back three.
Yeah, you know, once you're in the back line, you put on a scrum cap, you
have now, we have now trademarked that look to be a dynamic outside back.
Yeah.
It is just the best. So, Billy, hopefully in a scrum cap.
Yeah.
With Cheslin and Craigley Aronson. That's going
to
be...
And for me, what's exciting is that Eben's getting closer and closer to being one of the most capped Springboks.
Eben's 1-2-3 this weekend.
He's 1-2-3.
Chasing 1-2-7, which is Victor.
And I think he's gonna smash it at the rate he's going. He's gonna really smash it. But I think that is so exciting. You know, it's hard to see, you know, with all this talent in Springbok rugby, somebody being so dominant at that sport for so long. Victor retired and came back, and Eben is gonna come and, you know, hold that down for a while. And yeah, that's super exciting as well. RJ Snyman, I don't know if he's in or is he out, because I don't know if it's...
We have to see how that develops.
Is it a game day decision?
Can so I jump in and ask you guys something real quick?
Oh, go. Jump
yeah,
in.
Go. Go, Chemis.
So with the Springboks being pretty dominant in rugby over the last two World Cup period, I suppose, is there any indication of these guys not being such a dominant force in world rugby? Do we still have a long time as world leaders in the sport of rugby?
Look, from my end, with the amount of talent that hasn't even been called up to this team, I think we're going to be dominant for a while. We know that a couple of these guys won't do another World Cup. So, yeah, we've got a lot of talent that hasn't made through, and we saw it. And even with some of our players that we thought that were going to make it that didn't make it, we're in a safe position. I'd say it respectfully, we're in a very safe position.
Well, yeah, we got talent that's going into a structure that works and has tried things. And I know we've tried our game plans a little bit differently. But yeah, James, it's hard to see that this team will ever have any sort of let up. But World Rugby are doing their damnedest to try and change a rule every single fucking week.
Every hour. We're not even sure if we meant to have this podcast because of, you know, the rugby rule change.
I mean, there's going to be a rule change that I can't sit this close to Sandile because it might look like a scrum at some stage. I mean, this is how it's going to work out. But there are so many issues within rugby. I mean, Samoa can't tour. They've got no money. So they can't go and play games to become better. But yet, they are trying to find different ways every week to try and disband the scrum. So, no, this is my best. If you get a scrum awarded, now let's just say there's a line out on the far side of the field, they play an advantage, guys run across, all this kind of stuff, and they go back to the original advantage. You've got to run 30 meters to a scrum. Okay?
Yeah.
If you're not there when the scrum mark is called within 30 seconds, it's a free kick to the other team. So if you are getting blixed in the scrum by the other team, you'd be like, guys, just hang back a bit. Let's rather give away a free kick.
Yeah. It's such a
it's just so stupid. It's taking away something. It's like people, I get it. You can't slow rugby down. People want to see a faster game. I get that. But people also want to see a game that is rugby.
That is also makes sense.
As scrums. Oxenchair said it this week. If you want to do that kind of stuff, go watch rugby league.
And go trial this somewhere else. Don't try it in one of the biggest, you know, most televised, you know, tournaments in the rugby calendar. So
look, I didn't want to get angry this week. I got angry last week.
No.
But
worries.
These rules, And these things, it's just stupid. It's like this 20-minute red card story.
Yeah, and I think for all our sins with red cards and everything like that, and we had a conversation about this, about the World Cup, the referees are going to be such an important factor in, you know, the rugby championship. I hope they don't become the headline. I hope rugby and it's, you know, and the purpose of these rules, I hope it actually makes sense. I just hope they don't become a, you know, a headline, because it's going to be hard for them to implement it, because they probably don't understand it as well as, you know, everybody else. We all know Rossi on top of it, but like.
So, you know what it comes down to? When there's too many things in the mix, yeah, things become murky and it's hard to manage, and everything's done at a certain level. You're diluting focus. So this 20-minute red card thing, okay, so let's look at the pros.
Brown card.
It should be the brown card, it's a cuck idea. But if you look at the pros, it's like, okay, well, it's unfair. If you are paying money to go watch this game that you and I are watching a one-sided contest, the All Blacks were down to 14 men for most of the World Cup final. They found a way to be competitive. Yep. Let's not worry so much about this thing. Mm. There are ramifications and consequences to foul play.
Yep.
Your guy goes off, he goes off. So now what they're saying is, the team shouldn't suffer, the player must. So the player goes off, and then they put another person on.
Who cares?
Guys, there's too many steps.
There's too many steps.
Too many steps. We're basically becoming F1.
Yeah.
So what? I mean, do you get like DRS now when you're running after a certain guy at 22? You can go faster?
It's. I just don't understand why so many changes.
It's nitpicking. It's pedantic. It's stupid. Another thing they're doing now is you can't touch the scrum off. You can't interfere with him at the base of rucks and those kind of things.
Yeah.
Sure. Okay. Again, it's about making it quicker. So if you don't interfere with the scrum off, he gets the ball quicker. You get away from set pieces. Yeah. We've got to understand, we said it so many times, rugby's a contact sport and there is set pieces.
Yep.
Let's not have it.
Yeah, we're going to need another show to just talk about the rules and the rule changes and past and before, because I know there are traditional rugby fans that watch our show and don't know what is going on. We're also like you. We're going to see on Saturday at 6 a.m. what is going to happen. So
yeah, so 6:30 then. I just want to run through the other teams first. But
yeah, 100%.
But Dirk's made a couple of good comments here on the show, which we haven't got to just yet. But going back to what I was saying about the South Africa having everything in their playing field this time around, the fixtures are great. Everything's in their favor. That record in Australia, I brought it up a few weeks ago again. I always thought there was something around the All Black game which made us so cuck in Australia. Mm-hmm. So we go there with one eye on the All Black test, or we've just played the All Blacks. Whereas now it's like guys are getting onto a plane to just drill Australians.
Yeah.
That's it. That is the team sheet. These Oaks, drill those Oaks. There's nothing else to it. There's two games. These Oaks are going to be in great positions because the Brisbane Suncorp Stadium sold out for the first time since no one can remember. Why? Because of all the South Africans that live there who want to watch the box after the World Cup.
Yeah.
Then they're playing in Perth.
And that's Bloemfontein.
Basically.
My dad's a pilot. That's the Bloemfontein of Australia. It's just packed with South Africans. I couldn't believe it. I'm like, why are there so many South Africans here?
It's the thing. And they're all there to watch Drukas fight as well. Yeah. So we'll get into that next week. I want to run through the other teams and again tell you why I'm so confident the Springboks are going to win the Rugby Championship. New Zealand, they've got their hardest games away.
Yeah,
we all know that. They've got Scott Barrett missing for the first two tests, which I'm sure they'll still win handsomely against Argentina. 100%. Then they've got the Bledisloe Cup at home, which is stupid. I don't even know why they contested even more.
Yeah.
So, sorry. So they are second, but I think they're going to come and down against us. So that's why they're second. The tough thing is who to call between third and fourth. Australia, yes, they've got a new team and they're excited and they've got Joe Schmidt's great coach. But how have these Oaks traveled? How many of these guys have played international rugby overseas? And it's quite a rigorous tournament, this. So they go to Argentina as their away thing. So they play two games in Argentina. Argentina aren't great, but it's a long way to travel.
Yeah.
And then you got to come back and you got to play New Zealand at home. Yeah.
After being spanked by us.
But I will still say I see them going there and getting at least one win against the RGs, and they'll be good enough at home to be, I don't know, competitive for a lose within seven, maybe in one of our games. Kind of doubt that. But
hope so.
I would say them to be third. Argentina, I say they're going to be wooden spooners. They're going to get hammered against the All Blacks away. They've then got Australia at home, and they lose at least one of those. And they've got us, and we're going to trundle them from the first two games.
And I think, look, the one thing about Australia, we know that they're back at ground zero, and they have to develop this whole program all over again. I have a lot more hope about this, you know, this Australia, you know, development team coming through again.
But what are you basing that on?
that they've been so shit. So you can only come back up. You know what I'm saying?
I'm not going to knock that, but it's a fucking weak point.
Yeah, it's a weak point. They've been terrible, so you can't be more terrible now.
That's, you know, that's it. That's the line.
I actually have Argentina coming third. That's the crazy part. That's how, you know, because I know that this program has to start again. I think Argentina are going to give Australia a run for their money, and it's such a weird thing to say. But you can know, you can't get any worse than the bottom of the barrel.
But so, it's just weird how it's such a weird tournament like that. It's fragmented between the clear favorites, and that's going to be the way it always will be. Mm. And Australia have fallen off so much that it's now
crazy.
It's a tournament of two halves. There, I've said it. It is.
Yeah.
Okay, so look, we need to get through the rest of this now because there's so much more that we could chat about rugby. We'll leave it for next week, though.
Sweet.
But Siya Kolisi coming back to the Sharks. Do you hear about this week?
Huge. Huge. But I knew after that F-bomb that that team spoke about him that he was definitely going to take offense. He's a marquee player. They brought him in to, you know, to sell shirts and be the marquee guy in that team. How dare you call the GOAT fat and out of shape and all of these maybe things? Just,
that's how French people are.
Yeah, and of course he's going to leave. And that's why French people, this is why we got to always give you a hiding and take it personally as South African, because you say all this crazy stuff about us.
But Racing 92 has always been a bit of a soap opera.
Yeah, so
you know, now they've got Owen Farrell going there.
We're going to tell him he's terrible at rugby as well.
So you never really know. But my big question is, and no one's really given me a straight answer for this yet, who's paying for Sia to come home?
Because that means we owe them like seven, somebody owes them 7 million euros.
Put it this way. Saru apparently had offered to absorb the costs, but it's like 17 million rand. I don't know.
No, I think it's more, guys. It's big euros.
Yeah, I know the 7 million. I heard something about 7 million euros.
So, James, you might have seen a more recent story than I have, yeah. But Saru were distancing themselves from any transfer and absorbing and those kind of things.
Yeah, because put them in murky grounds, because they're going to bail out every South African who has a bad negotiated deal.
I mean, I don't think it's their place to have to step in here financially. Yeah. Yes, they've made some money because they won the World Cup and they've got these great gate sales. During the British and Irish Lions tour, they were this close to becoming bankrupt, as in, guys, we're done, we're closing the doors.
Yeah.
So let's not get too carried away. The whole thing about when our Springboks go overseas and play, I always think it's great because they get paid lots of money.
Yeah.
They get the international exposure. Someone else is paying for them to become better.
Yeah.
And then our local Oaks then get to fill their places in teams.
Yeah.
What's the result? What James's question, how do we stay dominant? So much player depth.
Yeah.
So when players come back, we've got to absorb the cost. Not that I would ever say no to Siya Kolisi in any of our local teams.
100%.
Kind of one of those things where Russi was joking, like, I didn't ask him to come back.
Yeah.
It's not the worst thing for our players to stay overseas.
And to go get that experience.
Is this, though, is this where I'm finishing off with this. Is this the final thing that the Sharks finally need to actually get that team back on track, though?
No. And I just stand against any, you know, organization having to pay for a superstar on their books. It's never happened before. It makes no financial sense. Either the Sharks need to go pick up that bill, or Racing 62 need to.
It's the next point here. Is Sia the person that's going to now galvanize the Sharks team? Because we know they've got talent. We know they've got players.
No, I think the Sharks have got some bigger issues than that systematically. Sia can't be the end all be all to change that team. That team was getting smacked around the whole season. I don't think he is that good to deal with that whole problem. I also just am against this whole thing of somebody that we got to fit the bill. And I say we, because it's Saru. I just don't understand where the logic of that. Somebody in between got to pick up the bill, and it's definitely not Saru.
I also saw another thing where the Sharks are owned by an American. I didn't know this. I don't know if you guys
knew. Yes, that's correct. Yeah.
Which would mean they are the most likely to be able to fit the bill. Or a player.
Well, they will be. And the Sharks have this. And the guy is so invested at this stage. Like, he's so in, he can't stop now.
That's such a fun fact. I had no idea.
Well, he was trying to buy the Stormers with Siya Kolisi, and then eventually he went away.
Sam is really trying to follow around Siya Kolisi in our South African rugby system. That's kind of crazy.
Alrighty. So look, guys, we've also got Curry Cup this weekend. The Blue Bulls are on top there. They're unbeaten. They've got four wins and a draw. Last weekend, crazy. The two highest scoring draws we've seen in quite some time. From there, we've got three teams. We've got the Cheetahs, we've got the Lions, we've got the Pumas. They're all doing brilliantly in third place on 18 points. Then we've got Western Province on 13 at fourth, and the Sharks are in fifth on 12th. So now there's a two-pool system. It's going to come down to the final four. We get to some semis pretty soon. You want to chat football? How excited about, I mean,
MTN 8?
Is it such a sideshow right now, or are you actually going to watch the game this weekend?
Like I said, I think MTN 8 is one of the best local tournaments that we have. Pirates played absolutely great football.
After a pretty slowish kind of first half.
Yeah, and then they did that set piece, which I couldn't believe it. And of course, as always, if Pirates win, Mr. Shangase, I've got to give you a shout out. You made sure that I stayed through all that commentary. So to my dad, yes, Pirates played very well, and I'll give them the credit. You said I must say it on the show. They won 3-1.
Was he wearing his new shirt?
Yes, he was. Shout out to you guys. Nice. Shout out to you guys. Nice. And they played very well. Stellenbosch, as we had them last season, I think they're going to kick on this year. 3-1, very, very good. This weekend, the true dogs coming through. You know, Sundowns versus Polokwane. I think Sundowns is going to absolutely annihilate them. But what's interesting is it's a post-Trelawney era. So they've got to make a big statement now and see if, was it Trelawney or was it the system? And I think, you know, the chairman made a big call saying it's really about Sundowns culture. So I think it's going to be tighter than we think it's going to be. Yes, I've got them beating Polokwane by a big mile, but we want to see the system now without Trelawney. And it's a post Pito and Trelawney era because they built that system. So that's going to be huge. And I think just for what happens with Sundowns moving forward, that's going to be a big, you know, showcase of what's, you know, the storyline. And then we've got
Sekhukhune United and versus Cape Town City.
We've got Sekhukhune winning that game. You know, they've had a great season. And Cape Town City, you know, up and down. So
okay, yeah. So basically the home trot there. Now there's also the Community Shield.
Oh, let's talk about it.
I mean, is the Community Shield, James, you're not excited, but you're a Liverpool fan. I mean, don't even try to act like...
Hey.
It just means Community Shield? Football is coming back. That's all it means for me.
No, it's cool. And it's a little precursor. Arsenal used to play this because they always used to win the FA Cup. But if you don't know what the Community Shield is, it's when the FA Cup winners take on the league winners. So that means Man City versus Man United.
Battle of the Bastards.
We all know Man City's going to win this thing 4-1. Easy. Tell me why I'm wrong.
Okay, cool. All I want to know is that we had this conversation a few months ago about Man United just needing to win for the sake of football. Guys, Man United is going to win at Wembley again, and we're going to shock the world. And also, we've got a bigger squad, better coaching staff. There are a lot of improvements that Man United have done, and there are a lot of, you know, things that Pep has lost. You know, Alvarez has just been transferred out. I think it's official now. Yeah. Fabrizio just gone to Spain. Man City haven't done anything new. And that is always detriment to something else. I think it's going to be closer than everybody thinks. And Man United won the last game. So I'm not saying we're outright favorites.
And Man United beat Arsenal preseason. And that's got to count for something.
Anyway, as I was saying, your preseason, and they destroyed my team in preseason. I've got so many injuries. But I think it's going to be closer. I think it's going to, you know, anything's going to happen, but I think Man United's going to win it. Trust me on Superbets, guys. I've been great for you the past 2 weeks. So Man United are going to win this.
So you're jumping all over the place. Are we getting the calls in the second here?
Yes, but I'm just saying back me. But the teams are great. What I like is that Man United have really gone in-depth to improve that squad. Yes, a lot of people are injured, but it's the intention. And this is where Man City, when they started the rebuild, is that belief that we're growing back into the spirit of who we are. And I think Man United are slowly getting back that confidence, and they come back with a winning team on the last day, I know, and they're going to give Man City a run for their money.
Okay. All right. So that's pretty much what we look forward to for the weekend now. We've got decent amount of football, the Currie Cup, and then, of course, Olympics and Rugby Championships. Yeah. We're going to come back after this with our big picks for the weekend, because Sandile tells me he's now 3 for 3. The last 3 weekends, he's giving you nothing but fire. He was going to give you some basketball tips, but now he's going to make it a bit more difficult for himself. He had to focus on the football. And I'm going to give you some rugby too.
Sweet.
All right. Slightly longer show this week. I know that we could go so much more in depth on the Olympics. And I think in its own way, I want to do like an aftermath of the Olympics.
Yep.
Because I think there's so many cool talking points we didn't even get close touching on. Comments, any comments on the live there we need to touch on before we get to our calls?
Say we didn't touch nearly in depth enough for the Olympics because Snipes actually thought the same thing. I think what we can touch on for the Olympics that we did miss,
we hardly
South
touched.
African performances. I mean, I know we didn't bring her many medals at all, but Tatiana Smith doing the thing she always does. We didn't touch on South Africans at the Olympics.
Yeah, because guys, there's only so much we can do. The South African team right now, if you look at a lot of our athletes, let's just go track and field mostly. These are people who need another Olympics. So we need to keep investing in them.
Yep.
Stick to the structures they've got, because we are fighting against the best in the world who are kind of like got these 8-year runways.
Yeah.
So I think it's really encouraging that we've seen so many more people. You see them scattered around the track and field. We know we got good swimmers. Like, we got people who are climbing walls. We got people who are in rowing things. Yeah. And we've got people. We just need to realize that we need to invest in people for a long period. You know, if we look at Africa as a whole, there's so much talent, but it's all this bitty little investments. It's like, oh, well, they did okay there. Yeah. Wasn't to be. All the teams that do well, it's long investment. And unfortunately, that's what the Olympics is. It's a resource game.
Yeah.
It's a resource game to host it. It's a resource game to win in it.
Yeah, and I agree with you. You know, we now need to start developing the next bunch of Olympians. Yeah, and, you know, I'm hoping that we kick on and it's all about, you know, resources and development. Yeah, and I think we did touch a lot in the Olympics. There's so much other sports that is coming up. So, Snipes, give us a break.
Yeah.
What are we thinking about back to the world of football? What does Gayton need to do about the football in this country? We've been 57th for the longest time. We haven't been
talking. Oh, that's a podcast in itself, huh?
2002, I think, was when we were last doing things in football. What does Gayton need to do here?
Do you want to jump in on that one, or should I? Could I go?
You go for it. Otherwise, I'm going
to try give. I'm going to try give a quick answer.
Yes,
I think he needs to just develop it. Start at grassroots. You know, one thing we've seen about Spain is one system throughout, and maybe variants of it throughout the club system, but one system in terms of national building. Yeah. That's as much as I can touch on right now. That's a whole other show on. You know, what's wrong with, you know, school of excellence and development and, you know, all these other aspects. But we'll jump on that. Clearly, that's a great topic. So I'm
look, if you are online on social media, just keep tagging Gayton and saying, go on to the On the Bounce show. Because I know James is trying to work on it. But if you keep just bombarding the oak, like, I want him to sit here and say to him, right, what are your five biggest things within sport? And then we can also then chime in.
That's a great question,
Gert. It is. You know, it's a great question, Dirk. Thanks for your input today. I think it's about having these clear-cut things. It's like, okay, Olympics, what do we need to do for the next 4 years? Cool. We're doing them now, though, in 2024. We're not doing them in 2026 or 2027. We're doing them right now. And again, it's like saying to them, okay, how are we getting Bafana to be better? Cool. We need to tie in Sundowns, Pirates, all the other teams. Is there a sort of song sheet we need to create for all of them?
Because, correct me if I'm wrong, Sundowns has a pretty good, like, grassroots system that
they're professional outfits. Yeah, they do well in Africa. They're competitive.
What does it do for us nationally?
Well, we need to nationalize that.
That's
one,
you know, that's why we need to have a national program. Like I said, are you pushing me to give you a long answer?
No, I was just adding. what do you guys think about? I'm unfamiliar about this one, but the new line-out rule
Hockey? It's weird, Ed, and it's like, okay, so if the guy throws it skew and no one touches it, it's play on.
Well, that's strange.
But then, so again, it's one of these things. They're so hell-bent on making everything faster that they're forgetting about certain basics. So if you throw a ball in skew and it goes on your side,
somebody gets an advantage.
And then you pick it up and you knock it on, you then the other team gets the scrum. But they had the initial indiscretion.
Yeah,
so if you get a skew throw on your side of the field and you throw intercept and they score a try, they get the try. You don't get to go, no, we'll take the skew throw, thanks.
Yeah, it's a strange rule.
It's not a great... Again, guys, back to my original point. It's not like the biggest issue in rugby right now.
Yeah, nobody's stressed about a line-out.
It's not a bad thing.
We mentioned earlier how the Springboks are probably game-focused right now as opposed to having one eye on the New Zealand games.
Yeah.
Dirk informs us that New Zealand rugby shows and commentary... they're absolutely targeting South African matches at the moment.
Of course they are.
Yeah, sure, because it's the biggest thing. They have to take off the biggest to be the best. And that's great.
Whoop their ass in the
target
final.
All the way, guys. I mean, like I said, Scott Barrett, the captain, the new captain, which I think is a really weird call. Yeah. But then again, it goes back to how much more depth and leadership do they have. Yeah. It's either him or Artie Sevier, or you give it to one of the other 12 Barrett brothers. Yeah. He's not playing these first two games. They're going to be shooting themselves up in Argentina.
And it's a revenge game. It's a revenge game. You know, that final was marginal. So
it was marginal with them with 14 players and Jordy Barrett missing two kicks.
Yeah. So, like, of course, I'll target me. Is there
last
anything?
One. Yeah. Before we get to Superbet's picks, guys, too much talk about girth today.
I disagree, brother. When you want to get the big stuff, you got to have something girthy behind you. All right, guys, look, we need to wrap it up because we both got so much Olympics to go watch, as you do too. So Sandin is basically halfway out of it because he has got Olympics basketball in his mind.
Yeah.
Okay, so for this weekend, all due respect given to the Aussies, I really do. I'll be that guy. Yes, we've done terribly in Australia and we're never going to underestimate the team. But this Springbok team must smash this Wallaby team. Yep. So if you go to Superbets, you can get minus 11.5 to get them to win. So if the Springboks win by 12 and above, then they win because the handicap is 11.5. I would go one step further than that and add on for a multiplier to give the New Zealanders minus 18.5. You combine those two there, we've got 3.62. So that means a hypothetical 100 can get you a hypothetical 462 back. The Box are going to smash Australia. The Kiwis are going to smash Argentina. That's my pick for the weekend. I think it's a pretty solid one.
Sweet, guys. My picks for this weekend, MTN 8, Skukune to beat Cape Town City, Sundowns to beat Polokwane FC. But the big, big one, and I want you guys to remember this part of the show, Man United to beat Man City. My 100 bucks will get you 1,806. So please back me. I haven't been wrong for the past 2 weeks. Trust me.
Well, you said it was three.
Three.
So what you're saying is you've got three results there.
Yeah.
So you've got Sekhukhune winning at home.
Yep.
You've got Sundowns winning at home. And Man United to beat Man City.
Mm-hmm.
Yo. Well, that gives you odds of 17. So go to superbets.co.za. You can play any of these markets, any of the sports that you like. Of course, there's a market on all the Olympic stuff as well. And if you are new to playing with Superbets, just use the sign-up code OTB, and they'll match your deposit balance up to 5,000 rand. So that's plenty for this weekend. We've got so much Olympics, all the rugby championships. There's various markets within that. We've got the football. We've got the Community Shield.
Yep.
We've got the MTN 8. We've got Curry Cup fixtures. Big breath, because it doesn't get any slower next week. More rugby championships. We've got the UFC 305 next week. It is so much action. Anyway, follow us on social media. Be sure to play with the ClipDrift That's Gold game. Pick your player. Share your player online with us, and you can win a case of ClipDrift Premium. I think that's about it, huh?
Yes, and don't forget, you did say follow us on all our social media accounts. Did you do that?
James normally does that.
James?
Now I'm on the spot. On X.
Guys, we need to go. We got lots of sport to watch. Thanks for joining us this week, as always, on The Bounce Show.